Okay, picture this. You turn off your TV, and now you want to kick back, relax, and completely overanalyze what you just watched. We made Galaxy Brains just for you.
Hi, I'm Dave Schilling.
And I'm Jonah Ray.
We're the hosts of Galaxy Brains, Polygon's brand new podcast launching Thursday, April 22nd.
Follow Galaxy Brains on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app to get new episodes in your earbuds every week.
That's right. Tune into Galaxy Brains, where movies, TV, and overthinking collide.
Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue in Conversation. My name is Brian Salvatore, and today on the show, Amazing Avenue's Grace Carbone speaks with Mets relief pitcher Trevor Hildenberger. Grace and Trevor are both film buffs, and so it seemed like a logical opportunity to put them together to talk about all things film ahead of the Oscars, which is this Sunday. Grace is actually going to return to the show next week with a different Oscars and Mets-related conversation, which should be a ton of fun as well. Grace and Trevor and me, for a few minutes at the end, chatted on Monday as the Mets had an off day in Chicago, and so enjoy that conversation.
Hi, Trevor.
Hi, Grace.
So I figure we'll start off just baseball, and then we'll move into movies, since I feel like that's what both of us are here to talk about anyway. You just got into a game for the first time this week. How's your time been with the Mets so far?
Oh, it's been awesome. You know, obviously a very talented and deep team. And, you know, we had a couple rainouts, we had a couple days off, snow out. So it's been hard to get into the rhythm in terms of playing baseball every day. But I think the weather's starting to clear up. And hopefully when we get into rhythm, you know, we really start winning some ball games. So it's
great.
I think the future is bright.
Yeah. You guys, you looked really good the other night, I do have to say. That was great, especially as the, I don't know if you know this, you've been with the Mets this season. Mets bullpen hasn't historically been very good, so it's always nice to have a good reliever.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's good to get the first one out of the way and put up a zero and start to feel more comfortable.
Yeah. So we're both here because of baseball. We're also both here because of movies. I'm a big baseball movie dork. I love them. I don't know what it is. It's just something about them. I cry during 90% of baseball movies, and I don't know why. It's like a Major League makes me cry for some reason.
Nostalgic type films.
Yeah. I'm sure being within it makes it different to watch those films, because I know when I watch movies about like filmmaking, as someone who's studied that and has done productions, it's different when you're like,
yeah.
Are there any baseball movies that you do actually just love no matter what mood you're in, you know?
Definitely. I think The Sandlot and League of Their Own are two movies. Yeah. Like no matter what mood, you can kind of pick it up halfway or whatever if you found it on, you know, TNT late night one time. Some of the movies you have to be in a specific mood, like Love of the Game, Bull Durham's in that category now. Major League, too. I guess Major League you could watch anytime.
Yeah. I guess, like, the goofier or, like, more funny ones that aren't trying to, like, actually, like, do, yeah. Like, they're easier to get into than...
You really want to, like, just pick up halfway through and when you're in a lighthearted mood.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to do that for, you know, a more serious film.
Exactly.
A lot of baseball films do sort of stretch the reality, obviously, because you're trying to create something that's more cinematic than realistic. Are there any baseball movies you watch that do actually capture that very specific reality of being a pro baseball player?
That's a good question. There are aspects of almost every baseball movie that are accurate and some are, you know, not accurate. But in terms of like the actual baseball playing, I think Moneyball is pretty good, if I remember correctly. Major League at times. What's that one with the like 12-year-old manager?
Is that Little Big League?
Little Big League.
Yeah.
I don't remember that, so I can't weigh in whether or not it's accurate. Rookie of the Year, like, not.
Yeah. I figured that the one where the kid breaks his arm and immediately becomes a power pitcher is probably a little inaccurate. Or else we'd be out, like, breaking every kid's arm to see if, like, the next power pitcher's out there. This is, now that we're in movies, this is a very baseline question. Do you have a favorite film?
I do. It's not very, like, original or trendy, but Vertigo is my favorite movie.
Yeah, that's a good one.
The score is just, like, mesmerizing. I was really captured the first time I saw it, and I've seen it probably 20 or 25 times now. And it's just, like, perfect.
I've seen Vertigo, but, like, it's one of those movies for me. First time I watched it, I was like, this is good. And then it took seeing it in the theater, I think.
Oh, okay.
Because I feel like there's certain movies like that where you hear the music and it's over the speaker system and it's big and, you know, like, stuff like that. It really connects.
It's a,
like,
different experience, truly, in a theater.
Yeah, I had seen 2 years ago, I think they put, or 3 years ago, they put 2001 A Space Odyssey in theaters on IMAX. And I had seen it and I loved it. But when I saw it on the big screen, it changed it.
Yes.
There's, like, no way you don't watch that movie differently after you've seen it gigantic.
Yeah. So I've never seen it like larger than a TV screen. Mm-hmm. I know they're supposed to be screening it at the Museum of the Moving Image in New York City in like the next 6 months. I don't know how many times a week for the next 6 months.
Yeah.
So like by later in the summer, MLB has a little more relaxed protocols and I can go to movie theaters again. And I would love to see it on a big screen. Because you're right, it does change your perspective of the scope of that film when it came out.
Yeah. It's
important to remember.
Because when you're watching those older movies, it's not like now where you know, filmmakers make movies and they know that at a certain point, it's going to be seen on a television screen, it's going to be seen on a laptop or anything like that. You know, Kubrick and Hitchcock were making those movies, they were only shown on big screens.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Filmmaker having mind is important too.
Yeah. The Museum of the Moving Image, they're actually at the same time until September 26th, I think I looked today, they're doing an exhibit of like all sorts of different props from 2001 A Space Odyssey at the same time.
Oh, it's like a whole.
Yeah, so they have, I went there a couple years ago, they had a Scorsese exhibit, so all sorts of different stuff from his movies. It's a really great place in New York. It's probably my favorite museum I've been to.
Yeah, I'm excited to go try it. At the Francis Ford Coppola Winery, they have like a bunch of artifacts from The Godfather and some of his movies. I don't know if they had any Apocalypse Now, but definitely like the desk from The Godfather, like a couple cars. So it was kind of cool to go there.
Yeah. What's your my favorite movie? So it changed. So when I was a kid, and I know that's like relative, I'm 23, but when I was a kid, it was A Christmas Story. I loved A Christmas Story and I still do. It's one of my favorite. I can watch that any time of the year. Yeah. Then when I was 15 was when I got into film and it was The Breakfast Club. And I watched The Breakfast Club and I was like, I want to do that. I want to make movies like that. Yeah. And then a few years ago, I saw Lady Bird and I went into it thinking like, oh, I'm going to like this. And then I left it and I cried the entire way home and there was no reason to. Again, it's a movie that I shouldn't be crying at, but it was one of those things where like you see a movie and you feel seen. Like I felt like she had like driven into my brain and captured everything I was feeling when I was in high school and just put it on big screen. So that's my favorite movie now. I don't know if it's going to change. It could possibly, but as of right now, it's Lady Bird.
It's an awesome attitude to have that like it could change. You could have another visceral emotion reaction to another movie and feel seen again. Like that, I love that ability. I think made me fall in love with movies in college of like, wow, this was carefully orchestrated. You know, the colors, the lighting, the blocking of the actors, or like the music, they're all to manipulate me in a way to feel a certain emotion. And I think that that's takes a lot of talent and skill to do well. And so when you feel those powerful emotions come up when watching a masterfully crafted scene is like, it's magic.
And that's one of my favorite things about film too, is it's every film is designed to make you feel something, and it's sometimes it's they design it specifically for you to feel this one way, and then other times, you know, you could feel it leaving one way, someone could feel leaving the other way. And I think it's also fascinating to watch these, you know, directors go about it totally different, because, you know, you walk out of a Kubrick film and he's made you feel a certain way, and Spike Lee could make you feel the same way, but he's gone about it a totally different direction.
Yeah, certain directors definitely have signature styles that are much, much, you know, a lot different.
And I know you've said that, you know, you went to school for, you said before you went to school for film, you went, and then you were considering being a film critic. Is that something that you might return to down the line? Not even as like a job, but just like a hobby thing? Because I'm sure there's websites that you could say former ball player reviews a movie and they want to put it out there. Like, that's like a, you know.
I'd love to obviously like watch movies for free. This is what I thought about in college. It was like, watch all the movies you want for free, you know, write about them and like get paid to do that. Like, yes, that sounds great. Where do I sign up? But really, writing about film is harder than you think. And I'd love to, you know, use those tools and skills again that I used in college. But in terms of making a living doing it, I don't think I'm cut out for it. But, you know, I'll continue to watch movies and with a critical eye the rest of my life. But I think since graduating college and like entertaining that idea of being a film critic, I've abandoned that hope, that dream.
When I went to school for film too, I went more on the production side. I don't know. Have you ever taken a film production course?
I think I took a lighting class, but I dropped it because my schedule was too busy.
I think it's
one or two classes.
It's interesting to sort of take that, like to do it yourself is so interesting when you're behind there and you're like, oh, now I have to figure out a way to make what I've seen, you know, on the screen a million times, to make something like that happen.
Yeah. I wish I did take a production class, but.
When you were in school, you went for a film, did you find any like genres or directors that you really honed in on? Cause I feel like sometimes, I know when I was first into film, I was like, I'm going to watch every Kubrick film, then I'm going to watch every Scorsese film, or I'm going to watch everything in this genre that I like. Is there anything for like that for you?
We took in college, they had the class where it would focus on certain directors and you'd watch all their works. And I took Spielberg first. So I watched like all his early work, you know, like the first film he ever made is like 8 minutes or something. Duel is like made for TV movie, which is awesome. I think one of my favorite films. And then we worked our way up to, you know, the big dogs of Jurassic Park and Jaws. And then at the end of the semester, you picked one scene and one movie that we watched and kind of try to tie in, you know, themes and motifs that Spielberg liked to use and why that's a quintessential, like, Spielberg scene. So I did that for Spielberg and Kubrick. So I've watched all of their stuff. I wish we had a class on David Fincher and David Lynch, because I love anything David Lynch, like, I'm going to watch.
Yeah, I love David Lynch too. That's a guy I have to be in the right mood for, though. I can't just pick up a David Lynch movie.
No, it's not super lighthearted.
Yeah. Like, I think the Lynch movie I've seen the most is weirdly Eraserhead, which I like, but it's definitely not my favorite of his, but I've watched it a bunch.
Uh-huh. I think it's Mulholland Drive.
Yeah, that's a good one. And then Fincher, the thing is with Fincher now is like, you could take that class and then in like 4 years, he's got two more movies. So
yeah,
it's interesting. You know, when you do someone like Kubrick, that's it. The book is closed. His entire work is there for you. Or Lynch, who hasn't made a movie, like a real narrative film in 15 years.
Right.
You know,
Fincher's crunching out or pumping out movies. Like,
yeah, Fincher's working on a new one already. He took like 7 years between Gone Girl and Mank. And then was like, I'm going to make four right now. Like
hey, sometimes the creative spirit just strikes you, I guess.
Yeah. Have you this is something I was thinking about. I feel like we hear all the time, like, as fans about, you know, a lot of times baseball players, like, oh, you know, after the game, whatever, we go play video games, whatever. Do you have any teammates who are like hidden film buffs, like guys who would, you know,
I'm sure I do. I'm sure there are people in the clubhouse who watch a lot of movies and, you know, like talking about them, but not to my knowledge. It's only been a couple weeks here. And
well, I'm more like in general over your career. Cause
yeah, I've talked about movies with different people. I don't think they've taken classes in college or anything, but discussing movies is always a fun pastime.
Yeah. Now this weekend, the Oscars are coming up. Have you seen any of the films from this year? Or
so I had a daughter in August.
Okay.
My wife and I were pretty busy, you know, we were on lockdown and then new parents. So we spent a lot of time with our baby and I haven't watched any of the movies. I want to see Sound of Metal. I think that's my number one movie I want to check out. But no, do you have predictions?
I mean, yeah, I'm a big Oscar person, as I'm sure several people at this website would tell you. Sound of Metal is very good. I really, really enjoyed that one. I mean, Nomadland's probably going to win everything, but I think my favorite of the year was Promising Young Woman. If you get a chance to catch that one.
I've heard a lot about it, but I have not been able to see it.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Carey Mulligan is amazing in it. And I mean, have you seen anything else, anything she's been in? Because she's someone who will disappear for 4 years and then just make a movie.
I don't think so.
She was in, if you get a chance, there's a really good movie called Wildlife. I just watched it and it's like a, it's like a little, like a quiet drama. It's directed by Paul Dano, the guy from,
Yeah.
It's good.
Support for this episode comes from Locker Room, the app that's changing the way we talk sports. Locker Room is a sports fan's dream come true. It's a live audio platform that lets you connect with other fans, experts, and even the athletes themselves. Locker Room makes it easy to start your own conversations. Talk about the latest rumors, takes, news, and teams you care about most. Join massive watch parties for all of your friends to react together in real time as you celebrate a buzzer beater or suffer the agony of a crucial bricked free throw. And if you've got a bunch of supremely spicy takes you'd like to fire off, you're in luck. You can even record the conversations if you want and release them as a podcast. So it's time to start thinking about catchy titles. It's all totally free and available at the iOS App Store right now. So go download it today. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports.
Dave, have you ever watched a movie or TV show and thought, I want to immediately fall down a mind-bending rabbit hole?
Yes.
Well, good news, buddy. We're doing that every week on Galaxy Brains.
Hey, I'm Dave Schilling.
And I'm Jonah Ray, and we are the hosts of Galaxy Brains, the new podcast from Polygon, launching Thursday, April 22nd.
Each week, we'll take the biggest topics in TV and film, Star Wars, Stranger Things, James Bond, and whatever genre Christopher Nolan decides he wants to get into next, and launch them into the cosmos. It's a podcast where we discuss how the aliens in Quiet Place 2 won't be as scary now that we've seen them.
It's a podcast where we ask why, if the aliens have such good hearing, can they not hear you pee?
Or your heartbeats. It's a podcast where we say A Quiet Place proves all aliens are liars.
And then my brain actually literally combusts.
And I become a pile of drool.
On every single episode.
Tune into Galaxy Brains.
Where movies, TV, and overthinking collide. We're launching Thursday, April 22nd, wherever you get your podcasts.
Follow Galaxy Brains on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app for answers to the biggest questions of today's biggest movies and shows. You'll learn a lot!
Like to never trust an alien, especially when you're buying an old VCR for Craigslist.
I can't wait to hear that story.
It doesn't end well, Dave. It doesn't end well.
Have there been, like, not even this year, just recently, like, any recent movies from the last maybe 5 years or so that, like, really connected with you?
Oh, man. I should have made a list. Sure. In the last 5 years, definitely.
Or just, like, recently. It doesn't have to be, like, that time frame, but, you know.
You know what movie I went into thinking it was, like, not really taking it seriously and then ended up blowing me away was Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah.
But that was, like, really eye-opening for me.
That was... What's fun about that one is the animation style. Because they really... They went...
The animators or something, like, insane amount of animation went into it. And it's just gorgeous.
Yeah. And they, like, it was... I like movies like, I think, what was it, Raya and the Last Dragon from a few months ago did something similar to a much lower level, but like sort of melding animation styles where they'll be like.
I saw that was on Disney Plus.
Yeah, it was good. And it was like they would do like it would be that CG sort of typical Disney animation now. And then they would do like moments of like, oh, we're going to do almost the old school 2D cell animation. So it was like, it was cool to sort of meld those two. I like when films do that, like in Into the Spider-Verse, they'd meld like comic book looking stuff with CG animation, you know, all sorts of different.
That's awesome.
Oh man, I just had a question. There we go. You took the Kubrick class.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite Kubrick film? I'm a big Kubrick fan too, so.
2001?
Okay.
2001, although Barry Lyndon is sneaky good.
Yeah.
People don't really think of that as Kubrick. They think like Full Metal Jacket, Clockwork Orange, Shining. But yeah, I think it would be 2001, probably The Shining, and then Barry Lyndon.
Barry Lyndon is one of those ones that like, I feel like a lot of people don't want to give it the time because it's kind of, again, it's like almost, it's a little quiet. It's a little like.
Very slow. It's pretty long.
Yeah. And it's like. That's one for like the people who are like, oh, I get Kubrick now, let me go in. But when you get to that one, it's a treasure. It's fantastic.
The first one you watch of his collection, you know?
Yeah. Personally, I think my favorite is Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah.
That one's...
But yeah, that's a good choice.
To me, I almost take Kubrick's filmography and like split it in two. Weirdly enough, like the color... Like I split it from Dr. Strangelove to 2001. I feel like those are two different eras of his career. And it's weird because like one's over the span of like 10 years and then the other one's over the span of like 30. But like they do feel very different in a way.
Definitely.
Yeah. And then Spielberg, you said you loved Duel. Is there any other from that Spielberg, you know, filmography that you.
Jaws. Truly Jaws is an amazing film that like changed, you know, what a blockbuster is, basically invented being a blockbuster. Jaws and then Jurassic Park. I think growing up, Jurassic Park is like, I was super into dinosaurs as a kid. So that was like the peak of entertainment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Here's a confession. I was born after Jurassic Park came out. I don't think I saw it until I was 20.
Did you see it on a big screen?
I did see it on a big screen. That wasn't the first time I saw it, but I did see it on a big screen.
It's pretty amazing.
When I grew up, I wasn't I've seen a lot of movies, but most of them were in the last 10 years. I didn't watch a lot of movies growing up. I think I could probably count on two hands the amount of movies I saw growing up.
That's great, though, because now you can see them, you know, with a retrospective vision of how, if you saw like a movie from the 90s,
yeah,
and how impactful it was in pop culture, and then viewing it now, that's a cool lens to look through.
Yeah. My personal Spielberg favorite is probably Close Encounters of the Third Kind, but Jaws is right up there too.
Close Encounters, huh? That's not one of my favorites.
I didn't love it again until I saw it on the big screen. And I don't know what it was, but it was just everything about it was gigantic.
Raiders is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Saving Private Ryan. You know, Sneaky Good is Minority Report.
Yes, totally.
Really good.
Yeah. That's the thing with like Kubrick and Spielberg and guys like that is like even their worst movies aren't bad. So right. Like, you know, Spielberg's, you know, he puts out movies that are like underseen and people are like, that's fine. But like, they're still good movies. It's just because we're comparing like the BFG to Jaws and like his other movies. Like you can't say like, oh man, this movie's bad when you're thinking like this guy also made Saving Private Ryan, Schindler's List. Like right. It's weird. You can't compare the two.
Yeah. Schindler's List versus like The Adventures of Tintin. Or
yeah. Like... They're two very different things. You're not getting the same thing out of them. I hope.
Yeah.
Are there any other directors that you enjoy, you know?
In Korean cinema, the guy who directed Old Boy and Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Lady Vengeance. Chan Park?
Yeah.
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 He's pretty awesome.
I mean, it was it, this one was the talking about Korean cinema, big sensation last year. Did you get to see Parasite?
I have seen Parasite. Yeah, that's a movie in the last 5 years that wowed me.
That's one of those ones that I mean, I saw it when it came out, and then I went back right around the Oscars. They were putting all the movies back in theaters, and I went to see it again because I loved it. And it's such a fun movie to watch with people, mm-hmm. because especially if you know what's going to happen and they don't.
Yes.
I remember sitting there being like, oh, I know it's coming. And then the like people around me were like gasping and stuff like that. You can't, that's the power of like watching a movie is exactly. watching that emotion come out.
And having privileged knowledge of like what's coming and then being able to share that with other people.
And I think that's really like something like Parasite. It's fun because you can go back and watch it and know what's going to happen and still you can get something else out of it then, because now you're seeing the clues being laid. You're seeing the building blocks of what's going to happen. Let's see. But genres, do you have any sort of favorite genre of?
Thrillers? Yeah. Thriller, suspense, mystery type are probably my favorite.
So that ties into the Vertigo sort of.
Oh, old boy.
Yeah.
Shining.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Brian, do you have anything you want to add?
Well, I do want to rep David Lynch.
I saw your little message, so I wanted to see if you had something to say about that.
I got very excited when Lynch was brought up. I'm currently, so I watched Twin Peaks when I was in college 20 years ago, and I have not rewatched. I'm in the middle of a Twin Peaks rewatch right now.
I'm about to rewatch it too.
It's bonkers. I had forgotten how much he goes for it instantly. Like, that's my David Lynch thing. It's like, David Lynch does nothing in a half measure.
Yeah.
Like, he has an idea. He just goes for it.
I feel like that's him and Spike Lee. Spike Lee doesn't do anything by half. He comes in, he tells you exactly what he's feeling, and then you can either get on board or leave.
Yes. Have either of you seen the David Lynch film, The Straight Story?
No.
So it's like the least talked about film in Lynch's filmography. It's PG and it's a Disney film. It's produced by Disney.
Wow.
And it's a true story about a guy whose brother is dying, and so he's in his 70s and he doesn't have a car because his license was taken away, so he rigs up his lawnmower and drives across three states to visit his brother. It's a true story. It's actually happened, and Lynch made the movie of it, and it's like this totally straightforward movie, except like three times you get a Lynch scene. And like, for somebody who loves Lynch, it's great. But I watched it with my college roommate and he was like, what the fuck was that? Like, just, you know, these things just popped out of nowhere and he had no idea what to do with them. I'm like, oh, that's a David Lynch scene. Like,
you're gonna have to get used to that.
Yeah, exactly. You have to know what you're getting when you go into a Lynch film. And then I was going to also say that I saw Jurassic Park. I'm considerably older than both of you. And so I saw Jurassic Park in the theater when I was in middle school, and seeing those dinosaurs on that screen was like as close to a religious experience as a cult film could have had. Like, it was just like, I could not believe what I was looking at. It looked so real. And in a way, like I had seen special effects before, but it was like, it was this totally different type of special effects presentation where it wasn't trying to look impressive, it was trying to look real. I know that doesn't sound like a big difference, but I think that there's a real stylistic difference in the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park versus how they've been presented on screen before, and it just blew away my 12-year-old self. Just totally blew it away.
That's kind of how I feel about the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the original one, because I saw it at the same age, like middle school, like 12-13. And we know how much money and time and effort went into like making everything in those films look as real as possible. So seeing like the two towers in theaters for my 12th birthday was like, the peak of a movie going experience.
So I saw Fellowship of the Ring at a midnight screening the first night it came out. And I was in college at this time, and my friend and I got to the movie theater, and we had both read Lord of the Rings books in high school, middle school, whatever it was. And we walked into the theater, and there was this buzz in the room, And there are people dressed like Gandalf and people like carrying swords. And like, you just got the feeling that for some people, this was the most important day of their life. And I'm not saying that disparagingly. I'm not. I'm like, I don't yuck your yum. Like, if you're into something, man, go for it. Be into it. And it just seemed like there were people who were just like, they've been waiting for this moment their whole life. And I remember sitting down and thinking like, please let this be good. Because if these people have waited their whole lives for this moment and this movie sucks, it's going to just destroy them. And obviously it's really good. And so, you know, it's a, it's something that I will always remember seeing that movie for that reason. The question I had for you guys was, if either of you are big documentary people or if you prefer fiction films.
I watch anything. Like, I seriously, literally, I'll watch anything. I don't try to discriminate. I feel like just being open to anything. If it interests me, I'm going to watch it. So, like, I love, some of my favorite movies of all time are documentaries. I love Hoop Dreams. I love The Thin Blue Line. I love, you know, any sort of documentary like that. Hoop Dreams is just so good. Like, I kind of want to watch it right now just because I said Hoop Dreams.
What about you, Trevor?
I think I gravitate more towards fiction films. Mm-hmm. I think having a clear narrative sometimes helps me get into a movie. But I gravitate towards, but I'm not like against documentaries. Mm-hmm. I just watch them at a lower clip. I think my wife likes them more than I do, and she gets me to watch more.
I will watch, so I watch documentaries, again, I love them, but I watch them, if I watch one, I'm gonna watch 20 in a row, and then I'm not gonna watch any for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then again, I'll watch one, and then I'll watch 20 in a row, and then I won't watch any for 3 months. So I have to really be careful if I'm like trying to watch something, and then I'm like, oh, in the middle of watching this thing, let me watch a documentary, and then I completely derail my like entire life for a week and a half.
It throws everything out of balance.
Yeah.
I guess where we'll wrap up here is just, is there a movie that both of you would recommend to our listeners that they maybe aren't aware of, whether it's like a lesser known film or a movie that maybe isn't typically regarded as great that you guys would recommend to a listener?
I'm going to need a minute. Because I'm like going through the filing cabinet in my brain. I have a few. I'm actually going to look at my Letterboxd for a minute. I'm a big Letterboxd person because I'm going to look at my favorite films and see what I've got.
I will kill time for both of you by saying my choice, which is that the Coen brothers are considered like great directors, but I feel like some of their films get inordinately more attention than others. And one I feel does not get enough attention is Inside Llewyn Davis, yes, which is one of their most recent films. And I feel like that film is perfect in almost every way. Like, the best movies for me are movies where I want to hang out in that world after the movie's over and talk to those characters and just live there. And to me, that movie does such a great job. I'm a musician, and I love when music is used well in a film, and that movie uses music amazingly well. And I love that movie. That movie makes me feel tired. It makes me feel like a loser. It makes me feel like Llewyn throughout the whole movie, and that's a good thing when it makes you feel like the character. So that's my pick.
I haven't seen it, sadly.
Worth seeing, worth checking out.
That's an impassioned speech. I will definitely
Do you have a pick for a movie that our listeners should check out, Trevor?
I mean, A Girl with a Dragon Tattoo by Fincher, I think, is one of my favorite movies of his. And I know they never like finished the trilogy of it. And there's a Swedish version, which is also good. But the American version, I really, really enjoy. And a lot of people haven't seen it.
So I'm going to have a few because I can't pick. I'm indecisive. So I'm just going to give like little tiny pitches for these movies. SLC Punk.
Go for it.
Blew my mind when I saw it. I love that movie so much. So cool. Booksmart came out 2 years ago. I feel like a bunch of people have seen it, but more people need to see it. I saw that movie in the theater 11 times. Cool. That's dedication. Including once I went to a Q&A for it. Best time of my life. I love that movie so much. I think I could quote it from memory. Let's see. Sing Street is a really, really good movie. Came out like 5-6 years ago about like It's almost like The Commitments, but in high school in the 80s. So it's like kids who love The Cure and Duran Duran creating their own band. Super, super good. It's by the guy who made Begin Again and Once. So the guy knows how to make a musical. Kajillionaire came out last year. Not enough people have seen this movie. It's weird. That's my thing with this movie. It's made by Miranda July, who's an artist, and like she's a weird artist. So that and Me and You and Everyone We Know both blew my mind, but you have to go into it knowing that you're getting a film from someone who does not think the way that normal people think. That's there we go. That, and here's my other thing. Watch more movies by women directors, because there's so many like women directors who aren't getting their work seen that once you see them, TCM, which is my favorite television channel, they did a whole thing last year where it was women make films. So they had this documentary series that was 14 hours long, covering all sorts of women made, like female made films. And they would show films made by women while like in that every night so that you would get the whole scope of it. Go find Dorothy Arzner films. Go find Ida Lupino films. They're the work made by women, especially back in the 1930s and 40s, don't get talked about because there's so few of them. But Dorothy Arzner invented the boom microphone and the use of stock footage in film. Like, this woman has changed the way. The first narrative feature film ever made was made by a woman. It was made by Alice Guy Blaché. There's film is historically made by women, and then it was pushed aside. Find their films. Ida Lupino made films that were B movies, but they covered real subjects. She made a movie about rape in like 1947 from like the woman's perspective, and it's mind blowing to watch. So that's my pitch: watch movies by women.
Yes,
that's a good pitch.
Yeah,
I concur. Trevor, if folks want to follow you on social media, where can they do that?
At @T_Hildy, I believe my handle is, both on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay. And we're really excited that you're on the Mets. We hope to see you for many years to come at Citi Field. And I think I speak for all of us that it's really cool to talk to somebody who's a pro ball player who's so passionate about film. It's really cool. And I love seeing the other side of ball players. So thank you for making the time today.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Grace, it was a pleasure.
Yep.
I really had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Of course.
Awesome. Thank you for listening, folks. We truly appreciate it. As I mentioned before, Grace will return to In Conversation next week with a different Mets Oscars connection. If anyone can figure that out, tweet at us. I'd love to see if somebody can put together what we're talking about. But if not, it'll be a lot of fun on Friday of next week as well. So please enjoy that. You can go to AmazingAvenue.com and check out our game recaps, our news, and more of our amazing podcasts. Amazing Avenue Audio, The Show, A Pod of Their Own, Unformettable, and From Complex to Queens. We hope you check out all those shows because everybody on those shows works very, very hard for what they do. We also hope that you check out Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow Grace on Twitter at OD Guitar. And until next time, let's go Mets.